comes to this conclusion, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate, of the canto is the next one. Text 80, there's no purport. I'll read the translation. On all the planets within this universe, the varieties of living entities, moving and non-moving, including the demigods, demons, and human beings, were all generated from the daughters of Maharaj Daksha. I have now described them and their different dynasties. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 15th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings, completed on the night of Vaishakhi Shukla Ekadashi, the 10th of May, 1976, in the temple of the Panchatattva, Sri Anu Navadweep, Honolulu, by the mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Thus we may happily chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And I bet he did happily chant Maha Mantra. I made a mistake yesterday by going ahead with the next verse because it was so similar to the yesterday's verse, but that kind of messed up the schedule of everyone giving classes for the next 2 weeks with the particular verse in the 8th canto. So we're doing a rerun of text 79. That's okay. There's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lectured in Dhaka for 30 straight days on the same verse without repeating any point, emphatically demonstrating there's unlimited volumes of meaning within the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada would say every verse, every line, every word, there's volumes of meaning. So see if you can unpack some of those volumes of meaning from these verses. I thought of speaking on three main points. One is repeating something from yesterday, but expanding on it. First point is that Krishna Parthav Upamantriya Pujito Prayayao Munihi. In the verse, it's describing that Krishna and Maharaj Yudhisthira, Krishna Parthav, Upamantriya, this is Narada said goodbye to them, bid farewell to them, after Krishna and Yudhisthira Pujitaha, they worshipped him. In the previous understanding, Narada is saying Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now we hear Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, worshipped Narada. So, what's going on? Narada should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knows very well, and Maharaj Yudhisthira also knows very well. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's enjoined in Nectar of Devotion. One shouldn't worship another person in the presence of the Personality of Godhead, in the presence of the deity. They worshipped together, Narada Muni. So the understanding is that as the Personality of Godhead, Krishna was setting a standard, and the standard was by Vedic culture, one who was in a position of kshatriya, as Krishna was playing the role of one in the position of kshatriya, the kshatriya should worship the brahmana, not only respect the Brahmana, but worship the Brahmana. Just as so many ways, Krishna, when he receives Sudama, his classmate from years and years and years ago, when Sudama came to visit Krishna's palace, at once he worshipped him. So our message then is, even you are the personality of Godhead, whatever position one may have. Following the example of Krishna, we worship the Brahmana. Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha. Krishna himself shows that standard. And so, within the Bhagavatam, very, very prominent in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, is this example and the refrain teaching again and again to respect and uphold Brahminical culture. As far as preaching Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada explained that in order to preach Krishna consciousness, it's very difficult because everything is topsy-turvy. And so to address that topsy-turvy condition, Prabhupada wanted to establish in society a class of first-class men. That's supposed to be us, by the way, in case we didn't notice it. It's supposed to be us, that first-class men. As far as the social divisions, it means Brahmana. So we're all supposed to, although we're on the track, whatever our tendency for occupation should be, or is, because of our psychophysical nature, whatever that is, we're all to be trained to become Brahmana. It doesn't mean we change our nature or change our occupation, but we become qualified like a Brahmana, literally, to perform deity worship and to speak the message of the Vedas. These are two very important functions that one who is a qualified Brahmana should do. Traditionally, there's a third one, to accept to the offerings of others. Of course, our practice is we offer to Krishna or Vishnu, and Vishnu Prasad is first offered to the Brahmanas. But even literally, to feed the Brahmanas is, in Vedic culture, is feeding Vishnu, is offering things to Vishnu. So it's the mouth, the head function. The head is supposed to see, the head is supposed to think, the head is supposed to speak, the mouth is eating. So these are Brahminical functions. On behalf of the rest of society, what Prabhupada wanted to create is a group of persons who would be such qualified Brahmanas. And the path of converting unqualified people to qualified Brahmanas was the teaching of the principles of Vaishnavism. Because embedded with, I'd like to say this succinctly, embedded within becoming a devotee, implied is one should become a Brahmana. This was very elaborately presented by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in the paper that he delivered, in the talk that he gave on the relative position of Brahmana and Vaishnava, with like a cornucopia of quotes from so many literatures, Vedic literatures and Vaishnava literatures both, primarily from Vedic literatures. Extensive description of what's the qualification of a Brahmana. It's a two-part presentation. Literally, there was a controversy. You know how it goes, there's controversies. So there was a controversy between the Vaishnavas and the caste Brahmanas, and the caste Brahmanas were objecting to certain honors that were given to the Vaishnavas. So there was like a hubbub, a dispute. Skipping some of the detail, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was expected to be the one to be a presiding personality over this dispute, but he was very ill and unable health-wise to do so. So he was expressing aloud his lamentation. Is there not one qualified person who can take up this task? Is everyone so weak and feeble-minded they can't address this issue? He was like unhappy. So his son said, if you so desire, I will do. He was just a young brahmachari, and the dispute was from very elderly puffy-wuffies, you know, very educated individuals from both sides. So this young brahmachari at the time, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, prepared, as is traditional, when there's a big dispute amongst intellectuals, he presented a paper. And the paper was delivered in the form of speaking it. And the first part was the glories of the brahmanas, and elaborately describing what is a brahmana and how glorious, according to Vedic culture, is the brahmana. So by the end of the day, the brahmanas were thinking, wow, this guy's smart. He's got it. He's got the truth. But they weren't ready for the next day, when the next day it says that a brahmana is one who knows Brahman, and one who knows Brahman should know the Supreme Brahman, and Supreme Brahman is Krishna, and that's a Vaishnava. So one who becomes a Vaishnava automatically is a brahmana. Oh. And it was so brilliant, you've heard this description, his rendition, it was this like conflict, intense intellectual debate. By the end, everyone was so amazed with his presentation. He received a standing ovation that went on for some long period of time, a number of minutes, a standing ovation from opposing parties. And so as he was attempting to leave, everyone in the assembly wanted to touch his feet. And he had a practice. He wouldn't allow people to touch his feet. And it was an uproar, so much so that the police got a bucket of water and pushed his feet in a bucket of water, sprinkled the water on everybody so he could get out of the assembly peacefully. So by becoming a Vaishnava, not only in name and in dress, but as the next part of what Prabhupada is saying here, asamshaya samagram, beyond doubt. So beyond doubt, where there's one is fixed in the core of one's heart, in the position of taking shelter of Krishna, and taking shelter of Krishna not by sentiment, not alone, not by so many other people are doing it, so I should do it too, by fashion, but by conviction, deep conviction. And when that's accomplished, asamsayam samagram, Prabhupada is referring to this also from the previous purport, that's the position of Vaishnava. What's the standard? For those of you that have read Prabhupada's books and heard him speak again and again on this point, what's the distinction between there's one test, Prabhupada would say, whatever one's scholarship may be, or how eloquent speaker they are, or how nicely they put words together in their literature, you look at one thing. Do they accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And are they engaged in his devotional service? If not, mudha, fool and rascal. There's the dividing line. And then, well, what about they're so learned? Yes, Krishna says, mayaya paritagyana, That's one category of mudha, fool and rascal. So people don't like when we speak like this, but what can we say because Krishna speaks like this? Mudha, fool and rascal. So by this, so we don't need to go around like that, but we should have a clear sense of this. Where's the distinction? The distinction is taking shelter of Krishna. And how is it that one can come to the position of taking shelter of Krishna based upon factually knowing that he's the personality of Godhead? So that's the second part of this morning's discussion. The Brahmana Vaishnava is honored because he has that position, and how does one come to that position? The verse that Prabhupada quoted in yesterday's purport and this morning's purport was the first verse of chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. Now those that work with Bhaktivedanta archives, when they were transcribing Prabhupada's lectures from the audio form to the written form, one of the verses, if not the verse in which Prabhupada spoke the most about, was this verse, chapter 7, text 1, Bhagavad Gita. Very important verse, so he's referring to it here also. And the verse is indicating how, it's a how-to verse. From my travels about as a sannyasi, one of the refrain questions is how to. So here's a how to answer. Krishna is saying, Maya sakta manak partha yogam yunjan madashraya asam sayam samagramam yata gyasyasi tachrinu. I'm going to explain to you, Arjuna, how to come to that position where you know Krishna fully, free from doubt. Now, the consequence of knowing Krishna full, free from doubt is you surrender to him. And if you're honest, that's what you do. If you factually understand it, you have to be honest to factually understand that, then you surrender to Krishna. As he indicates in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam. Thus knowing, bhajante mam. Bhuta bhava samandita. So, that knowing Krishna as the sarvasya prabhava, the source from which everything else comes, the absolute truth is that from which everything else comes. Knowing Krishna to be that becomes possible by the hearing process. Tachrinu. Tachrinu. Just like in the first verse of the 9th chapter, little Bhagavad Gita portion of Bhagavatam class this morning, but Chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita and Chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita are, the messages, section by section of the chapter, are almost identical. They're running parallel. Chapter 9 is the most confidential knowledge, but so it's expanding on the meanings of what's in the 7th chapter, but the 7th chapter is Krishna's making a promise. I'm going to explain to you how to come to that stage where maya sakta manak partha, when the mind, so these two things, the mind is asakti, stage of attachment. The mind is fastened to Krishna. It can't be stuck. Fixed upon Krishna, asakti. Attached to Krishna. Maya sakta manak partha yogam yunjan madashraya. Their consciousness is absorbed in me. So this is mind attached to Krishna, consciousness absorbed in Krishna. Almost the same language, certainly the same message, comes in the very last chapter of this middle section of Bhagavad Gita. The middle section of Bhagavad Gita is emphasizing bhakti and shuddha bhakti. It's the middle six chapters. So chapter 7 begins it, and chapter 12 ends it. And in the verse of chapter 12, Krishna says the same thing. The topmost stage of attainment of consciousness is where the mind, this is chapter 12, text 8, the mind is attached to Krishna, intelligence is fully absorbed in service to Krishna. What Krishna says there is, when that those two conditions are reached, surely you live in me eternally, without a doubt. Again, is asamshaya. So, how is that achieved? It's achieved by the process of hearing. Tat shrinu. What has just happened in the Bhagavatam is that Narada has been explaining the science of Krishna. And then he concludes, Krishna is the personality of Godhead. Although he's your cousin, Yudhisthira, he's more than your cousin. He's the personality of Godhead. So how does one know? By the process of hearing. One can know beyond a shadow of doubt. That's what Prabhupada is saying, the third part of this purport's message. One should come to that stage where there's no longer any doubt. Prabhupada writes, if there was any doubt before hearing from Narada Muni, now that doubt should be gone, cast away. Without any doubt and without any defect, one should understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus surrender unto his lotus feet. So it's by the process of hearing. Again, the first verse of the ninth chapter, Krishna says it the other way around. Rather than saying, hear from me, he says, I am now going to explain. Pravakshami Anasuyave, because, my dear Arjuna, you're not envious. That's one of the key qualifications. Certainly it's an irreplaceable qualification to be not envious, in order to receive the message and go the whole distance, go to the position of being completely fixed in understanding of Krishna. The first verse of the ninth chapter, Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most secret wisdom, knowing which, you shall be relieved of all the miseries of material existence. What a wonderful benediction. All the miseries of material existence shall be relieved just by my explaining this to you. Pravakshami Anasuyave. Because you'll receive it in its fullness, because there's no resistance on the other end. There's no enviousness on the other end. Then Prabhupada concludes the purport by saying, ordinary people don't do that. Even the people that read the Vedas don't do that. Even the people that read all the Vedas don't do that, generally. But if one is fortunate, what is that good fortune? The good fortune is receiving the association of one who is non-envious and has received that knowledge. There was one lecture in New York that is a very memorable lecture for me. Prabhupada was describing what he felt was his great fortune. He said, "My spiritual master found me in some dark place. And he came into my life and made me fortunate." And he paused and everyone went, "Haribo!" And he told me, "Now that you have become fortunate, you go and make others fortunate." "Haribo!" Then Prabhupada said, "And now I'm requesting all of you." And everybody knew what he was going to say. "So you should go forward and make others fortunate." "Haribo!" So that's how one becomes fortunate. One receives the fortune of one who received fortune. It's how it works. Our book distribution marathon is that same effort, receiving that good fortune and undergoing some little austerity to be an assistant of that mission of Srila Prabhupada to make others fortunate. And Prabhupada's concluding remark is, although it may be only after many, many births, but that's okay. Let there be a beginning. I attended one lecture when Srila Prabhupada was describing this about initiation. It was another memorable experience. Prabhupada was saying that initiation is for persons who are serious. Of course, his standard of being serious was very liberal at that time. But he said, he looked around the room and said, anybody can engage in devotional service. But many people come and they'll go away. And I was looking around thinking, you know, Prabhupada could see many of us are here today and gone tomorrow. I mean, not just theoretically, but he had that capacity to see. But those who are serious, those who take this message and imbibe this message, then that's what initiation is for those persons. Of course, many persons took initiation and also went away. But what Prabhupada was doing is the same as he's saying in this purport. He is giving others an opportunity. That's what our preaching is, more politically correct these days. We say outreach. Preaching Krishna consciousness, distributing the message of Krishna consciousness, giving the opportunity for that message to touch the heart of someone and change their life. It may take many, many lives, but at least we can give them the opportunity for a beginning. And some of those persons will make radical changes in their life. And I'll end with this. The time, so at least I was sharing this with Devamrita Swami. He was reading some report from UCLA that, and he takes UCLA as like a good barometer of kind of like general America, you know, people that are continuing with their education, because it's such a huge, sprawling university. And the survey shows that unlike in the 80s and the 90s, that it's just, there's a sociological turn where young people are considering in their careers, their choice of career, that they want to do something that will make a difference in the quality of life. You know, along with that means there's an older generation that didn't do that. So there's this kind of rebellious, I don't want to do the same thing. I want to go down the path of something that makes a difference. And I shared with him that Pragosh had read a similar report, both Europe and the United States, where a similar idea, selection of career, something that's going to make a difference. The entering freshman, you know, what are their criterion? Before is how much money you're going to make. Or on the other end, how much money you're going to make, or what your position and prestige will be, and you have security. Now it's a whole other perspective. And it's a barometer of not just young people entering college, it's a barometer of America. People are thinking much more about out of the box and do something that's different, do something that has value, brings value into society and into one's life. So that's a strong encouragement that says our audience is in a particular mindset right now. It's a great opportunity to reach out and give them something that's going to make a difference in their life and in society in general. Prabhupada certainly addressed that audience when he was writing his Bhaktivedanta purports, and he will speak strongly to them, those who take the time to read Srila Prabhupada's books that you all provide during this book distribution marathon. Hare Krishna. So that's the end of the chapter, and tomorrow starts Canto 8. Any comments or questions? Yes.
Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that as Bhaktosi Me Sakacheti, because you are my devotee and friend. So, I mean, first we come to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that seems, makes it a little difficult to feel that Krishna is your friend, at least in the sense that we have in the human society, because he's a very different kind of person, very elevated, very powerful person. So how does one graduate to that? Or is that, is the idea of friend maybe not correct in my mind?
Well, Krishna is, there's Arjuna and there's us. And for us, Krishna is our friend, and for Arjuna, he's Krishna's friend. And there's different kinds of, or levels of understanding what that means, or the mood of what that means. To accept someone as your friend is someone who wishes you well, consistently wishes you well. And you have towards them some well-wishing. And that's, you know, on a peer level. Now, Krishna, your point is Krishna's not a peer. He's the supreme, he's way up there. But as way up there, one is, he's well-wishing towards us. And towards him, you know, we want everything for him. But from him towards us, he's our dearmost friend. We can't find someone as such a dear friend. Prabhupada would point to the example of Super Soul. We're rebellious. We, you know, behave in such a way we deserve the body of a worm and stool, and Krishna is still in our heart. He's like committed to us. You can't find a friend like that. He's the dearmost friend. And then you go way up to Arjuna, and it's rasa. It's not just, oh, he's friendly towards me. But it's a rasa of service. So elevated of a rasa that Krishna wants to be the chariot driver, so Arjuna accepts him as the chariot driver. Just like Narada. Narada knows that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. Now Krishna wants to worship me. He's not saying, no. That's an offense. I can't have you worship me. You're the personality of Godhead. I worship you. He's receiving the worship of Krishna because Krishna wants. It's very intimate. So friendship can be more intimate. But in the common sense of well-wisher, regardless of our, you know, moments of not being friendly toward Krishna, or lifetimes of not being friendly, he's committed to us, the dearmost friend. Yes? Yes. Hare Krishna.
Also, it seems that Krishna was present during the conversation with Narada and Maharaj Yudhishthira, and he was listening to you because at the end it says that he and Maharaj Yudhishthira worship Narada. So it seems that Lord Krishna was actually present.
Oh yeah, he was.
Listened to the whole conversation.
Yes,
he was. That took place like a few hours or
yeah,
at least an hour.
Sure.
See? And he,
sure. Just like when Shukadeva Goswami was speaking, who was present? His father, his father's spiritual master, so many sages. He's just a 16-year-old boy speaking Srimad Bhagavatam in front of the king of the world, 16-year-old boy. And they're honoring him. So the honoring is because of his Krishna consciousness. Yes. Microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. The verse you quoted, 9.1, about Krishna saying that you can understand me and I'll reveal this secret knowledge to you and all the miseries of the material existence will be removed. To me it seems that this knowledge has been revealed to me. You know, it's been years and years, and I still find that the miseries of material existence are still there. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, the cause is the enviousness. And even though knowingly I'm not envious of Krishna, there is certainly envy. And if you could address that, how to get rid of that deep-rooted anartha of being envious of Krishna?
Yeah, it's not just an anartha, it's like very, it's primordial. It's fundamental. A beginning point is to recognize that it's there. I'm tempted to tell a little story that Rabindra Swarup Prabhu narrated because it illustrates your question very nicely. I'll go down the path and you know how he reconciled it. When he was still in college working on his PhD, Prabhupada was visiting the Philadelphia Temple, and he was, if I'm not mistaken, he was the president and completing his PhD because Prabhupada wanted him to complete his PhD. So knowing that Prabhupada liked having dialogue with scholars and, you know, government people and so on, VIPs, he arranged for Prabhupada to have a, you know, for his, the other way around, for his PhD professor to meet Srila Prabhupada. So he was very happy. So he brought Prabhupada, brought the professor in to meet Srila Prabhupada, and right away, the first thing is the professor challenged Prabhupada because it was the philosophy department. So he had read something, and the something that he read made him challenge Prabhupada. How can you worship somebody who is a debauchee like this? And Prabhupada, and Rabindra said he wanted to like disappear, you know, shrink and you know, like hide under the rug or something. He thought, oh no, offending my spiritual master, my PhD professor. So immediately, Prabhupada, without blinking, said, Krishna is not the debauchee, you are the debauchee. He said, every woman, every living entity, man or woman, is the emanation of Krishna. And every spirit, soul embodied in a woman's body is Krishna's energy, and you are the debauchee because you're trying to enjoy Krishna's energy. Just like that, like 30-second turnaround. But Rabindra was thinking, wait a minute, I'm also married. And that means I'm a debauchee too. And but I'm not, you know, I love my wife and, you know, I'm not exploiting Krishna's energy and He said he couldn't sleep all night long because he was like, you know, he couldn't not accept what Prabhupada said because, you know, he revered Srila Prabhupada, but then that meant he was in the same category as his PhD professor, the Debauchee. And how he reconciled it was, what brings one to the material world is in fact this fundamental issue that we have with Krishna. If we didn't have a fundamental issue with Krishna, we wouldn't be in the material world. Like, you know, we have our issues with Krishna, although we're devotees. We're trying to get over it. Our issues with Krishna. So it's not, the term anartha is something that's kind of like, you know, like amongst a variety of things that are unwanted, but those variety of things that are unwanted grow from this one. The primordial one is our enviousness of Krishna. So your question was how to get over it. First is to recognize it's there. This was like an epiphany for Rabindra to recognize it was there. Strong, like. So it's not a matter of, you know, just condemning yourself or something. It's freeing the heart from that tendency. So if in fact, like in this case, all of the living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels, if I have a relationship with one of them that's husband or wife and children that are my dependents, one should see them from a spiritual perspective. They're Krishna's parts and parcels, and my position is to serve Krishna. So I serve Krishna. I serve my husband, I serve my children, I serve the devotees. In fact, I'm just not a service machine, but I'm a service entity. And in a loving way, I change that enviousness into service by understanding, just as the purport says, without a doubt, Krishna is the personality of Godhead. Therefore, I change my approach. Instead of being envious of Krishna, I serve Krishna and surrender to Krishna. You know, from the heart, not just in name. That's the... So the beginning part is to recognize that there's the thing there. And by the process, it's the same process, the process of hearing, and let that hearing enter within the heart and enact on it. Tamahar Prabhu?
Well, thank you. I was going to ask a similar question, which you just answered, about why we still have material miseries and how that's connected to the verse where Krishna says, because you are not envious of me. So you've answered that very nicely there. I also just wanted to thank you very much for being here. We really appreciated the wonderful classes and other programs that you've done. It's besides the people in this temple room, of course, there's at least double the amount of people on the internet, and they listen to the iPod or the podcast later, and it goes on Dandavat. So it's a really, coming to Latra is always a real nice opportunity for preaching to devotees, and we really appreciate your annual visits.
Thank you. Except the group of devotees that are going to be launching tomorrow, they're probably running around getting everything together. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.